Hello and welcome to the Yay Yoga podcast. I'm Renee Liu. You may know me as a yoga teacher, and today I'm the host of this podcast where I talk to the most inspiring teachers from around the world about their yoga journey. Today I'm talking to Sebastian Balenci. He's a teacher in yoga and Eastern philosophy, and I was very excited to reconnect with him again as he was my teacher on my first teacher training at Santosha. Now, in this episode, we talk about Sebastian's transformation, Eastern philosophy and Tantra, and how to teach from these traditions, and so much more. I will put all important references in the show notes, so check it out at yayyoga.nl. Welcome to the show, Sebastian. As we are recording this, it's the 25th of June 2020. I'm here in Amsterdam and we're slowly coming out of this COVID-19 lockdown, and we're entering another interesting time with the Black Lives Matter demonstrations. You are in Mexico right now. You've been there during the whole corona situation. How were the past few months for you? How did you experience these times, and how are you experiencing these times?
Well, thank you so much for having me here, to inviting me to have this conversation. Very honored, very grateful. I have been in Tulum in Mexico for the last months. I came here for a retreat, actually, to take a retreat. Most of the year I'm teaching, so I decided to take a course in the south of Mexico, actually, when it was the earthquake yesterday. It was very strong earthquake, actually. And then I moved to Tulum to stay a few weeks, and then my plan was to stop in Mallorca in Spain, because I had a retreat set there that I'm gonna teach, and then I have the another retreat and a teacher training happening in Bali. As you might guess, it all got canceled, you know, because of this situation. It was very unexpected. It bring up a lot on me personally, and I'm sure it's bringing up still a lot in the collective. Huge shifts are happening, and somehow, because of this situation, we are pushed to start asking the right questions, start shifting our way we see reality. It's like a little energetic earthquake for us to wake up. And I feel like all the processes that are very unexpected and bring adversity and are very chaotic bring a possibility of awakening, but also bring a lot of bad stuff from us, you know. It's like all our shadows, or shadow aspect, or darkness. People start getting very, very angry. I was getting very angry and triggered at some point as well. But I think all of this situation, whatever is happening in the other world, whatever it brings up in the inner world, are catalysts, I feel, for change, are opportunities for change. And this is the way that I have been taking it. Big shifts have been happening since in my personal life, and I feel like big shifts are happening in the collective as well. And the only thing that left is trusting the universe, trusting the underlying intelligence of the universe, that things are happening for a powerful reason. And the only thing that left to us, in a very humble way, right, to trust and surrender.
Yeah, beautiful. How do you see your role as a teacher in this? Did that change as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, being a teacher is just one of the roles that I play, right? I am a lover as well, a son, a student. But the role of the teacher is very interesting, because when all these things happen, and it happened not only me, to any teachers, probably to you, it happened as well, you being a yoga teacher, there is some kind of underlying pressure that I feel it's comes when there is like moments of chaos and moments of adversity, that we as teachers, we need to kind of step up in your teachings and show up with full power to guide, to lead, to teach, and so on. And I feel at some point this is just you know, the ego trying to, or the ego projecting and a specific way of behaving that doesn't make any sense, you know. We are, if you're gonna start teaching and you start sharing content, and this is what I felt at some point, from a space of fear of, oh my God, I am a teacher, this is the role that I'm playing, so I need to show up, and if I don't do, I will be eventually judged, I will be eventually rejected, or whatever unconscious samskara, unconscious pattern that you may have because of the identification with that role of the teacher. It will not come with the right intention. It will not worth it. So at some point I catch myself in that, and I remember telling some friends that I was talking about it, that I don't feel like doing anything. I'm just really feeling like stepping back and observing this whole situation. And at some point in social media, everyone was sharing. Everyone has their own opinion. And at some point, everyone fighting about what is really happening, and Bill Gates and the 1% and reptilians and conspiracy theories and vaccines. And it feels like people need to have the pressure to have an opinion, especially teachers, eventually to have a strong opinion and defend it with death. When I realized that I was tapping into that a little bit, I just recognized it, and I choose to move back. So I was off of social media for a long time when this was happening. And actually, at some point, I got a strong call. One of my best friends passed away in March, at the end of March. And after that happened, I feel the call. I feel a deep message, a deep insight on all the situation. And I feel the need, from a space of love, to share something, you know. And I remember I make a Facebook Live about that. And it was very beautiful for me to somehow letting go the fact of being late to the party of social media commenting, social media opinions, social media teachings. But I recognized that it was the right time, and that was beautiful, actually. It was a beautiful experience. And then I felt called to do an online video series of Tantra. People were asking me about Tantric philosophy and how to bring the Tantric philosophy and ancient wisdom of yoga as well into our modern life, especially in these chaotic times. So I make a free video series. That was I was incredible how people receive it. There was like hundreds of people joining, and I didn't promote it too much, but it was shared a lot. And I make this short free video series on Tantric wisdom for chaotic time as a way of okay, I think there is some stuff that are very helpful for me and can be very helpful for other people. So I step in my role of a teacher, full power, as you ask, and it was a beautiful thing. It was a very transformative awakening moment for me, and I guess for some people. And that leads up to other collaborations, other sharings, other immersions that I'm working on now, actually. So yeah, that was my experience. I feel like I cannot escape from that role of a teacher. It's just come. But I'm glad that came in the right time, with the right purpose, with the right intentions, with the right integrity, right?
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Thanks. I want to straight dive into the interview, and I think we already started. But the first question that I want to ask you, and I'm asking this to all the guests, is what is yoga to you?
I feel like, depending on the context, I'm always drawn to have different answers for that question, because it's too wide, too broad, too powerful, too deep. For me, ultimately, and this is an answer that is not... It's not an historical answer. Sometimes I have this tendency to define yoga in a very historical way, Vedic base, Bhagavad Gita base, Patanjali base, or Desikachar base. thing that we have been studying together, actually. But for me, yoga is a participation on life. For me, yoga is participating in life, expressing yourself freely as who you are, fearlessly, with authenticity. And this, what I'm saying this because this, purposefully, I want to go against the idea of yoga as something that you need to do to reach something. Even if it's a yoga based on embodiment, like hatha yoga, that you are doing asanas or pranayama, I'm going to do this pranayama because I'm feeling anxious. So therefore, I have these expectations of not feeling too anxious, so I'm going to do this practice to feel better. There is a future expectation, there is a future promise that is that is not aligned with the main concept of it. Yoga from the Vedic period are talking about a state of divine union that already exists. A state of a divine union that already exists, which what is keeping the whole universe connected, that underlying intelligence behind everything. Some people call it God, some people call it consciousness. The state of union, the state of connection, the state of oneness is yoga. So it doesn't make any sense that you're going to do yoga, or you're going to even define yoga, as you're asking me now, what's yoga for you, in a way that you're going to have a future goal or a future purpose. So that's why it's participating. Is responding to the guru's grace, as one of my teachers, Mark, he said. Yoga is responding to the guru's grace. And the guru, not necessarily a person, can be anything that inspire you in your life. You know, a beautiful sunset, a beautiful landscape, a beautiful connection with another human being, a beautiful moment with yourself, a beautiful practice of even hatha yoga or meditation, but how you respond to that, what inspires you. So that's why we do the asana, that's why we do the pranayama, that's why we do the meditation, that's why we do the visualization, the mantra, whatever it is because as a response to the beauty and the bliss of being, right? To the beauty and the bliss of just experiencing reality in this embodied form. So I get this inspiration, I get this joy, I get this bliss, I tapping into this bliss of existing, therefore I engage with life. That process is yoga. So I engage with life through asana, I engage with life through meditation, I engage with life through pranayama, I engage with life through love making, through mindful eating, through having a walk in the forest. You know, that participation for me is what yoga ultimately, this is what resonates in my heart, actually. This is what resonates in my soul.
Beautiful, thank you. I want to ask you to share a bit about yourself and how yoga entered your life.
Well, about myself, I grew up in Chile, in Patagonia, the Chilean Patagonia, and then pushed by the forces of family and society and culture, I was invited to study business and economics. And this is why I spent 5 years after high school and 2 years working in that field after I finished university as well. And I'm saying was pushed because that was not really an authentic decision from my inner self that I deeply want to dive deep into business and economics. It's just what it was available for me, what I was invited to. It somehow I was living in default instead of being a creator of my own life, right? It's a big difference of that. It's like you're just letting the universe do whatever external influences, cultures, universal social samskaras to do whatever with you, instead of consciously envision and creating something that you want. So I was not there yet. And actually, after working in sales, stock market, and finances for a couple of years, I was called to that. And the way that I was called to yoga, it was through, again, through adversity, through chaos, through illness, through pain. As I guess most of the people join the path. Most of the people join the path because maybe they have been cold for a while, but as we don't listen to the message, the symptom, the message gets stronger, and sometimes is an unexpected adverse situation that happened in your life. In my case, I start dealing with a lot of anxiety, depression. I was with pills, I was with treatment, and I was not in a very good space, and I was in a very dark space. And somehow I always resonate with Eastern philosophy, Buddhism, Tantra, Yoga, the Tao. And at some point, after being very depleted, no energy at all, I remember having a strong panic attack one day and not being able even to go to work. Very crappy relationships, no relationships at all, not engaging with other people at all in any way, in any intimate way. There's no intimacy outside and inside, because if would be any degree of intimacy at that time, probably I would be taking better decisions, more aligned with what I really want, right? So that is connection within, that's lack of intimacy within, I think, translated into these physical and mental symptoms that was very unpleasant. And then I tried yoga, and I remember I went to the first class kind of hitting. I didn't tell my friends because I was ashamed that I was practicing yoga, because I don't want they to judge me or reject me, and I was already too scared from a space of lacking, right? I don't want to be cast out from my tribe, so I need to show up as a man, or as I thought it was a man, you know, completely out of what it is, the truth ultimately. But and I was not telling anybody, and I was start taking classes of Tibetan yoga, which is the yoga of the five movements, they call it. And I have I was lucky to have an outstanding first teacher. I couldn't ask for a better teacher. It was interesting because nowadays, the modern business of yoga, if you're in a big city, you need to have luck to find a good real deal teacher. And I had. So she somehow initiated me in the practice of yoga and in the practice of the mind, in the practice of meditation. And I started practicing consistently with a deep intention. And then I moved to Australia with a work and holiday visa. And from Australia, I moved to India when I take this very seriously, very deeply. And I did my teacher training, and I started living in ashrams for months and exploring masters, traveling around, exploring sacred places. And then my life started changing. All my anxiety, depression, very lack of intimacy with myself and others, and this disconnection with reality, disconnection with the world started dissolving. And I started tapping into something very beautiful, a deep sense of connection, a deep sense of meaning. And when I experienced that, I realized, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to share. This is what I want to live. This is what I want to practice. This is what I want to integrate in my daily life, not only my yoga mat. And that's why I'm so grateful for that little unpleasant moment, that adversity that we may experience as humans, because normally, as I say before, that are the catalyst for change, for transformation, for awakening towards a life with more intimacy with the self. Right, more closer to your true self, and that's beautiful.
You mentioned that you were already interested in Eastern philosophy. Is that what you got introduced to first before the yoga asana practice?
Yeah, that's another thing that I feel very blessed, that my dad is a Tai Chi and Qigong instructor. She have done Reiki also he was probably one of the first vegans or vegetarians on my town, right? He was like a very weird, strange guy, like he's not eating meat, especially in the culture of Patagonia. And I was interested in Eastern philosophy because of that, but I was not diving deep into that until these things start happening. So my house, if you go to my house when I was living with my dad, is full of like little Buddhas. He know also how to write in Chinese. So it's like my name in Chinese reading in my room, like Chinese and Hindu things, like, you know, hanging from the wall. Or he was into martial arts as well, so there was a lot of movie about Buddhism and martial arts and kung fu and energy work. But you know, when you're a kid and when you're a teenager, whatever your dad do, it's like meh, because it's your dad. You know, you don't want anything related with your dad. You want to be a rebel. As a way to be a rebel, paradoxically, I was like, yeah, these things are kind of cool, but I'm not really into it. Until these things are happening. Nowadays I am like asking my dad, let's do a Qigong session in the morning. Let's do a meditation practice together in the morning. Would you guide a Tai Chi class for me and my friends? But at that time, yeah, I didn't. But that's why there was always this little interest, there's something here. And I don't know, I say I feel blessed because I don't know why this, you know? It can be karma, it can be... just the underlying intelligence of the universe, of providing this opportunity for me to at some point using all this knowledge, all this wisdom, all this practice from my own healing. And yeah, probably the biggest influence was my dad, especially when I was a kid or a teenager.
Was that kind of incorporated in your upbringing? Like, would you, your dad's kind of teach you that, not explicitly, but maybe now looking back at your childhood, maybe you recognize some lessons from Eastern philosophy, or was that not the case at all?
Can you repeat the question, the last question?
Yeah, so I'm very curious to hear if your dad was also not explicitly, but maybe implicitly, teaching you some lessons from Eastern philosophy when you were kids.
Absolutely. There is like magically this very easy to understand Buddhism book, like Buddhism for Dummies or something like that. There was in my room, you know. I think he never, for example, he never pushed me to be vegetarian or vegan, even though he was. He has been for more than 20 years. He never pushed me to practice with him. He kind of tried to push me at some point a little bit about martial arts, but he felt a little bit me rejecting. And I think he was very careful of not burning me out on his things, you know? And he always gave me the freedom for me to, okay, the information is here. You can dive deep into them, into this understanding and these practices, ancient Eastern understanding and practice whenever you need, whenever you want. And this is what happened. But yeah, in his behaviors, in the way that he see life, in the ways that he embraced nature, and in the way that he lived, for sure, it was an influence. It was a teacher, definitely. Not directly, like I'm gonna sit down here, I'm gonna teach you some stuff. But the way that he act, you know, the way that he's devoted to life, he's devoted to Mother Nature, he's devoted to other sentient beings, and the respect for others, and the kindness, compassion, and love, all these qualities. And qualities also that you develop in martial arts as well, you know, that determination, that more masculine energy of focus, strength, determination, respect, collaboration, support, and definitely that has impacted me greatly.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think it's interesting because a lot of people will follow their first yoga asana class, and that will be the first introduction to this little aspect of what yoga is. Whereas I think it's different when you enter the yoga world from a more philosophical place.
Right.
And I'm also curious, how did your yoga teacher journey go? Because did you start teaching yoga asana first and then shifted more towards philosophy, or how did that go?
right? I was always have been interested in philosophy since I was a kid. You know, I feel like I'm natural born philosopher. If I remember the conversations or the thing that I talk in classes when I was a kid, or the thing that I asked my dad, and the books that I was being interested always, it was about the wonder of life and wondering about topics about death, after death, the soul, the spirit, the metaphysical aspect of reality. And so yoga, tantra, Buddhism, Eastern philosophy in general, Taoism has a deep metaphysical map, we can call it, of reality. And then when I become a teacher, of course I was sitting, especially I had an outstanding philosophy teacher, my main philosophy teacher in Rishikesh in India. And that was definitely transformative and life-changing, just sitting in his classes. And at some point, I think this is what is one of the things that I do now, you know, and what I try to do, and you have been in my classes as well, and this is my passion, you know. It's create a space for all of us to dive deep and wonder and start asking questions and start wondering about possibilities. So in terms of my career, after doing my teacher training, I definitely loved asana, and I have been practicing sports, so I was somehow already have some connection with my body. And the thing is, when I start teaching, because I really wanted to start teaching, of course, as you say, people come to yoga with some specific expectations of what yoga is, you know? Yoga is, you have your mat, you do some movement, you do some stretching, you are aware of the breath, namaste, and bye-bye. Which, it's fair, you know, it's fair to understand that this is the way that now Western is integrating this powerful message, and I don't think another possibility. I'm very optimistic on this way, you know. I think is the way. It's too deep and too powerful, and there's so much tradition and history to pretend that Western will grasp all this depth, all this information in its totality, you know. And always everything starts with the body, you know, so this is very body focused. So this is what I did. From India, I moved to Koh Phangan in Thailand, and I teach for about a year in different yoga studios and resorts, mainly asana. But I felt, you know, like, I felt like I was a ninja, like secretly infiltrated, you know, secretly in the yoga asana world. But when I was there and when I was with my students, I used the first 10 minutes to talk, you know. I most of the time I do, it's like an hour and a half, okay, 10 minutes to talk and ask questions and create a little conversation maybe with my students. And this is something that I encourage my students that are yoga teachers or other yoga teachers friends to do that. Say why we're here, what are your intentions? Think about intentions. Feel free to share your intentions in front of us. I want to know. And also to educate. It's not about entertaining. At some point I might have felt into that. And this is one of the biggest mistakes I would say on yoga teachers. Especially yoga teachers that eventually you know what you're passionate about, you know what yoga is all about, but then you feel this pressure on entertaining people so you can have more students, so you can get more better paid or just because of your ego, you know, I want to entertain the whole and becomes a circus. This is what people are doing, a circus. I'm gonna entertain like a clown these 30 people because that's the only way that they will come back to my class. They want a joyful moment. They want a happy moment, having me guiding them to do what they want to do and what they expect to do. And there's a big difference between entertaining and educating. And if the vinyasa class that I am meant to teach is set up in that way, 1 hour and a half vinyasa yoga in this studio with yoga mat and so on, amazing. I have the space, but I will not lose this opportunity as a teacher, because I'm gonna be in the role of the teacher, you're gonna be in the role of the teacher, people who are listening to this, you're gonna be in the role of the teacher. You don't want to miss this opportunity to educate. not necessarily entertain. And sit down and talk about Chittavritti Nirodha, talk about Patanjali, talk about the concept, the ultimate concept of yoga, which is participating in this never-ending male and female collaboration, a dance between the opposites, is the union, is the lovemaking of life. And what we're going to do now, we're going to set that intention, that we're going to practice this in an embodied way, using your body, using your breath to participate in, for a moment, for a sacred moment, for a sacred 1 hour and a half, to participate in life, right? And set up in that way, set up the right intentions, and educate people with a little bit of philosophy, a little bit of history, because people want to know. People might have some expectations, but ultimately people want to know and people want to be educated. That's why they're coming to your classes. That's why they're coming to you. And we have that responsibility, and I would say the opportunity to do that. So I love asana, but asana with the right intention, with the right mindset, right? Not in a way of acrobatics, not in a way of pushing the body to the limits, not in a way of just doing I'm gonna sit down and just stretch my body. But what is, maybe it will look the same, but when the intention is different, when you are in that, with that intention of cultivating a deep sense of connection, a deep sense of love, a deep sense of meaning, starting with your body, your breath, so therefore you can apply that with your partner. Therefore you can develop a deep intimacy with Mother Nature, with your family, with your lover. This is what we wanna practice. This is what I wanna practice in that vinyasa flow. This is what we want to practice in that whatever class you're teaching. That deep self-awareness, that deep self-intimacy with yourself, so therefore you can be intimate in your relationships. Therefore you can spread the light of love out there. And this is all responsibility. This is what is what I felt called at some point, and this is what I am actively inviting other people, other yoga teachers to do the same.
I absolutely agree, and like you said, I've been in a teacher training where you were one of my teachers, and I felt really inspired by the way you were starting this conversation, this interaction between all of us as a group, you as a teacher with the group. Well, I can imagine that if you're just starting out as a teacher and you have a few classes in a studio in a city, this 1 hour class where people expect to have like some strong flow where they work on their apps or something, then it can feel like it's not the right space to share something philosophical, or to even take the time of those 60 minutes of people's workout to talk. No, how do you right. feel about that?
Right. Yeah. Right. Thank you for the question. I personally would rather to get kicked out from a yoga studio, and I would rather to have less students. But I will teach from a space of authenticity and integrity. And this is my invitation to other teachers. Because if you want to be in that studio and you want to be that that amount of students because of money, because you want to live from your passion, as people are talking about that, which I think is amazing, but that will make you shift your teachings, and instead of educating, you will shift more to adapting to what they are expecting and somehow entertaining. I think that is completely out of integrity. So then my invitation is to find another passion or another thing that you like, that you can get your incomes and your money, and then do this from a space of love and integrity, and from a space of educating people about what, under your experience, you realize that, wow, this is powerful and this is transformational. Now, I'm not saying it's not possible to live from this, you know, but that may happen on time. You might attract the right students, and the right students might attract you on time if you keep sharing and teaching from your heart, and educating from your heart. I think it's not sustainable long-term being forcing your teachings for what the people may expect. Now, for some teachers, the approach of yoga and their understanding of yoga might be, okay, that's the intention, this is what yoga means, and in order to do that, we're gonna do a more strong body-based practice. And I think it's fine if it's coming from very clear intentions, and that then you're sharing from your heart and you're sharing your truth and you feel in integrity, and then you will not end up deplete anytime. But And yeah, you can attract the right the students that are looking for that specific teachings, you know. So for example, this person understands yoga in that way, and these students this is what the student wants, and it's gonna be a perfect match. Then nothing to say. People are doing yoga or not doing yoga, whatever. That's another discussion. But at least people are having fun. People feel aligned with their intentions. People are enjoying the moment. You know, I'm not against that. The problem is when you feel this is off, when you feel this is not right, but you're still doing it. That's my point. Let's say you feel like, well, you know, the superpower vinyasa flow yoga, which is like, if you love it, amazing, you know, and I think has a lot of positive things, like a very physical based asana practice. But if you're only teaching that and you feel it feels off because it's not aligned with the deep meaning and the deep sense and the real meaning of yoga, you will end up depleted on time. You will end up tired. This is not sustainable in the long term, and it will make you sick. And it doesn't make sense. You know, you're creating a space for you're holding a space for people to so they can feel more connected with themselves, and you're moving away from it as a teacher, paradoxically. So that's my intention. That's my invitation for yoga teachers out there is to first of all develop the self-awareness you need, and the self-awareness you need to see, okay, what is yoga for me? What means yoga for me? And how this applies to my life. Then the next step would be, do I really want to share this? I feel ready to share this and express it and share my passion, my truth that is changed my life, and I want to invite other people to change their life through it. This is important because maybe you love yoga but it's not ready and you don't feel like teaching it. And the third step, on the third step of this kind of process is about keep committed to that teaching and let go anything else that is not related with teaching with authenticity and with integrity.
Thanks. I want to talk about something that's very close to your heart, I think, and that's Tantra. And if we talk about Tantra in the modern Western world, people think about the sexual traditions. But Tantra is obviously way more than that, and I think you are the one that can explain that the best in a way that people understand it.
Sure. Well, yeah, there is a lot of misconception about what Tantra is. Most of the people connected with some kind of cosmic sex and techniques to last longer or stuff like that, which are very disconnected with what Tantra really means in the tradition. Somehow, maybe indirectly connected, but not at all in the core of the philosophy. Tantra started probably as a system of practices, around the 500 of the common era, 500, 600. And it's strongly influenced by a bunch of different traditions and religions. The Shaiva tradition, the Shiva and Shakti tradition, or religion. And for sure it has some influences, you know, of ancient epics, texts like the Bhagavad Gita or the Mahabharata or even in the Vedas, but they have their own set of books called the Tantras or the Agamas. And the whole point of Tantra is basically spiritual technology for me, spiritual technology to expand the notion of yourself. this is what literally means, an instrument to expand. This is a little difference with what yoga means in terms of the word, which is yoga is about union, tantra is about expansion, which ultimately are explaining the same, which is a full connection with the divine and the whole. But the point of tantra is from that space that you are already, that you are already perfect, that you are already whole, that you are already divine. So, some teachers actually even say that you are already enlightened. There's nowhere to go. There's like, forget about the future promise of enlightenment. You are enlightened. The thing is, you forgot because you are like, your mind is blurring your true self with like stories and patterns and traumas and samskaras and karma and so on. So the tantric practices are made as a spiritual technology to get rid of that and tap into your ability to expand the notion of yourself into the divine consciousness, which is the heart of the Shiva and Shakti, the lovemaking of the Shiva and Shakti. Now, for that, Tantra suggests as a bunch set of practices which related with embodiment, meditation, visualization, mantra chanting, and especially rituals. Rituals that make you participate in this life. And in ancient times, there's some rituals that were related with sexual practices. That's why probably now this is being embraced somehow a specific set of sexual practices, which is not really, but it's connected with the tradition in terms of the ritualistic aspect of sexuality as the symbolic manifestation of the cosmic union of the yin and the yang, of the male and the female, of the Shiva and Shakti, the heart of Shiva and Shakti. So we live in this apparently duality, right? Everything looks dual. Tantra suggests that everything is one. And we need to understand and play with the duality to make that connection, to make that union. And they were doing some sexual ritual. It's not the core of the practice, but it was done years ago as a way to participate in that cosmic union that is constantly happening. And then around the year, in the 1300s, it was when Hatha Yoga tradition came. And Hatha Yoga tradition is a manifestation of the tantric tradition as well. It's, as one of my teachers says, the mother milk of Tantra. And if you think yoga, and if you pay the understanding of yoga with the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, around the year 400 of the Common Era, that was basically made on meditation. Patanjali suggests that yoga is a meditative practice. Then after, in the year like 1300 or 1350 or something like that, it was when Hatha Yoga Pradipika came, for example, and that was a tantric-based practice with tantric-based breathwork, tantric-based meditations, with visualizations, with mantra, with the whole kundalini and chakra system, which is tantric-based as well, which is manifested now in modern yoga. So even modern yoga, and people, it's important to people to understand this, modern yoga has strong tantric influences, strong tantric influence, because most of the modern yoga practice is based on Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga is based on the tantric tradition, you know? And yeah, this is what ultimately for me Tantra is, a spiritual technology made not for the ascetic, not for the monk, but for the one who is engaging with life actively. Right? Tantra is made for the one who is having a house, having a family, having a business, dealing with money, having sex, getting married, you know? Can we also be free if we're not a Buddhist monk? Can we be free? Yes, this is what Tantra suggests. Actually, Tantra was made not for the ascetic, not for the one who escaped to the temple to meditate, but for the one who engaged and participated in this worldly realm. Because this worldly realm is not something that you need to move away, as some religions may suggest. It's something that you need to engage because it's divine. It's a manifestation of the divine consciousness. It's sacred. Everything is sacred. And you have the power to see God in everything and everyone. This is what also Tantra invites, to see the divine and to see God, let's say, in everything. And that's why it's so ritualistic, because rituals are part of, it's a core part of the practice, and ritual is as a way to participating in the sacredness of the mundane, in the sacredness of this conversation we're having, in the sacredness on the divine nature that you can tap when you see in the eyes of the waitress of the rest of your favorite restaurant, when you are able to see the divine in everything and everyone, and this is what Tantra suggests. Now it has been developed, it's a practice that is based on an embodied movement in mantra, visualization, yantra, and then with Hatha yoga it was based on asana, more deep, more active asana, more active meditations, different kind of breath work, bandha, mudra, probably a language that many of the teachers that are listening understand, or I hope they understand, bandha, mudra, mantra, and all of that. And yeah, so it's very wide, very broad. That's why there are different lineages as well. But something that is important to understand for the modern day practitioner is like, they're probably, if you're practicing Hatha yoga, your practice is very tantric based. You know, if you're doing rituals, your practice probably is very tantric based. If you are not a monk and you are practicing your spirituality in this worldly realm, probably your embodiment and your practice and the way that you're seeing life is very tantric based. So that's something important to understand, to avoid misunderstanding of this tantra is something very specific, very far away thing of some kind of cosmic sex, which eventually indirectly is related, but it's way more than that. It's a way of participating in life as yoga in a very special and specific way.
Thanks for explaining that. I am very curious about your self-practice, and also if there are some tantric traditions that you practice in your daily life, but more in general, can you share about your self-practice, what it looks like now and how that evolved over the years?
My practice has been shifting, normally depending on the circumstances and the moment that I'm living of my life. First of all, I like to have a 24/7 practice. Now I'm going to dive into the spiritual wisdom in this hour, and then I'm going to unplug. You know, this is my main practice in my life. My main practice actually is my relationships. My relationship with myself, first, with my own body. How I relate with my own body, how I relate with my own thoughts. That awareness and that sacred action that I might take from that awareness, and that trust and surrender of the sacred action of my awareness are part of my 24/7 practice. And this is the way that I want to practice mainly, you know, because it doesn't make any sense if you're doing an amazing asana, if you can hold your chaturanga for so many minutes, and if you can do amazing planks and amazing back bends, if your relationships are crap, you know. Doesn't make any sense. That's my main focus. And applying the ancient philosophy and the ancient wisdom on my relationship also with my lovers or with my parents or with the people that I interact on a normal day. Now, in terms of sadhana or a spiritual practice that as a routine that I may do every day, that's specifically actually shift depending on the circumstances. Normally, I like to do a bunch of different short practices through the day than one big in the morning, as most of the people that I know do. Most of my friends wake up, let's say, and they have an hour and a half, 2 hours, asana, pranayama, meditation practice. I normally would, for example, wake up and do a short meditation and short breath work of bringing awareness and tapping into my body, and of like, let's say, 15-20 minutes, for example, as to bring some activation in the morning of my body and to bring some awareness of what's going on, what is present, right? Accepting and embracing everything that it is. And that can involve specific breath work, specific meditation with specific drishti, specific focus. And then, for example, I might have breakfast and I do some work, and let's say before lunch, for example, I'm gonna do a half an hour of embodied movement. You know, normally I don't use mat. That is very unorthodox, but because I feel like the mat limit me so much. And my embodied movement normally is based on an intention and what I want to embody, what aspect of me, what archetype within I want to embody. And I dive a lot into very functional and primal movements. So I do a lot of, for example, squatting practices or hanging, you know, from a bar or from a tree, breathing on that hanging, moving how we are supposed to move, our bodies are supposed to move in a very functional way. Like, so I'm just basically, it would probably look very weird and funny looking at me doing my embodied movement, because I'm basically in my all fours like a little animal, you know, walking around my living room, you know, breathing, then stop, squatting, then do some backbend to like counterpose what I'm doing, then lying savasana for a moment, then stand up again, and working in my joints and the awareness of my body through that embodied primal based practice. And then let's say, yeah, that would be eventually could be anywhere between 15 minutes to an hour eventually. And finally, before bed, for example, even in the bed, laying down and checking how do I feel, how do I feel about my day, visualization practice about what I'm claiming in my life, how I want to live my life, the quality of the relationship that I want to have. So I'm creating these neurological connections inside of my brain in order to attract that vibration, attract that way of living. So basically that would be in a more specific way, you know, like little short practice of embodied movement, meditations, specific mantras. If there is specific occasion, I like to do a specific rituals as well to let go energy. Yesterday actually, at some point I was feeling very, very angry for some situation. I was feeling some pain in my body, I was very angry. So I create a little ritual, very short but powerful ritual that shifts that anger completely. It alchemizes anger to a space of more presence. I go to my room, I tell people around that I'm gonna do a ritual, that if they hear me screaming or jumping, they just let me alone. I close the door, put an incense, put some music eventually, and from that space I grab my pillow and like, wah, I scream, or eventually hit my pillow. It's a safe canvas, it's a sacred environment for me. It's a very, probably very neo-tantra practice, but it's very helpful, you know? It's very helpful for me because after 15 minutes of doing that, I do a shavasana and I feel all this vibration of this internal alchemy that just happening in my body. And then when I come back and I show up with my loved ones, I show up with more presence, with more love, after, instead of releasing the anger to them, you know? So these little rituals also are part of my practice as well. So mainly, as I said before, my practice is a practice of awareness through the day. But also through the day, I have these little short participations with my body, with my breath, with my mind, to keep myself aligned with the way that I want to live my life.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. I'm having a check on the time, and I see that we're already talking for an hour. But I have a few more questions that I want to ask you. And one question, I think you already answered it kind of, but
yeah.
I want to ask you, what, from your perspective, makes a great teacher?
That's a good question. And it's just feeling that inner call, that inner overwhelmed need of sharing that gift that has transformed you. Is a call, is an inner call that you cannot pretend that it's not there. This is when you become a teacher. And whatever that comes out from that space of love, it's gonna come out well. What the qualities that make a good teacher is to having practicing and integrating yoga in your life that somehow have shifted something, somehow has been transforming you. And then after that, the next call is that you feel the need and the deeply genuine love-based desire to share that. That's the only thing that you need. And here I'm not talking about any type of certificate, any type of teacher, any type of lineage, because who knows a specific teacher, specific of lineage that nobody knows, is not famous, can tell you one thing that will shift your life completely. One thing based on yoga, the yogic Vedic wisdom or the tantric wisdom, and then it will create such a powerful transformation, and then you decide to dive deeper into it, into that understanding, into the practice, into the embodiment of that teaching, and shift your life. So then eventually you're gonna feel that need of, people need to know about this. I use this to deal with my own anxiety of being a human, because being a human, it creates you some degree of anxiety by default. Being alive is very overwhelming sometimes. And well, that this wisdom or this tool or this practice is help me to live my life better. I'm gonna share it. And I feel the call to share it, and you do it from that space of love. Loving intentions. That probably is gonna be the main quality for a great yoga teacher.
Which teacher inspires you the most?
Inspire me the most? I have had a few masters that I really resonate and inspire me a lot. Probably the first one, it was a teacher, her name was Mariela Raglianti, my first yoga teacher in Chile, that inspired me a lot into the Tibetan yoga. Then I moved to, in India, I have another teacher called Roshan Singh, which he was the founder of Rishikesh Yoga Pith School, but then he moves out years ago, so he's not connected with that school anymore. He built an ashram, and his teaching touched me very deeply in the philosophical understanding of yoga as a way of living. Then I have been studying and connecting also with one of the students of Desikachara and Krishnamacharya, with Mark Whitwell. And probably you know Mark as well, right?
Yeah.
And Mark is a good friend of me as well, and we keep in touch sometimes. And he's inspired me because he understands yoga as a way of being intimate with reality. And for me, this is what it's all about. Beyond that, I have a few masters that has been, you know, like daily masters, the guy who is cleaning the pool of my hostel, you know, who I have this little conversation and he tell me a couple of things that is shift completely the way that I perceive reality. The Mother Nature is always one of the greatest teachers for me to observe the patterns of nature. When I observe the patterns of nature, I just want to integrate that in my life, you know, because anything that is misaligned with the patterns of nature creates more unnecessary suffering, as I have been realizing in my life. Everything that is more aligned with the patterns of nature, it has been always very, very beautiful and powerful. And then another teachers that I have been following that I haven't met personally, which have been biggest influence on the way that I practice, probably Ram Dass, Alan Watts, Alejandro Jodorowsky, Carl Jung, even understanding the human psyche, the archetypes, and the collective unconscious, which is very related with tantric philosophy as well, has been also, I would consider them also a very strong mentors, very strong influence on my practice and my teachings.
Yeah, for sure. To wrap up the interview, I have some rapid-fire questions for you. So,
sure.
Quick answers. I know it's quite a challenge for you to keep it short, but let's see how we go. First question, what is the best advice someone ever gave to you?
Do not accept, do not reject, contemplate.
Yes. What advice do you have for all the
yoga teachers that are just starting out and that are listening to this podcast right now?
To practice, to let the concept of yoga, the philosophy of yoga, to sink in, to observe how it shifts you, and from that space, teach from a space of your own experience and from a space of love.
Which book should be on everyone's bookshelf? It doesn't have to be yoga related. It can be, though.
Oh my God, so many books come to my mind. Probably I would say The Prophet, which is based on this is like connected with Sufi mysticism, is from Cahil Gibran, and it's a transformational book.
Beautiful. Who or what inspires you the most?
Who or what inspire me the most? Children inspire me the most. When I see how kids moves, how kids play, how kids engage with reality, how kids engage with, how kids deal with suffering, these are one of my biggest inspiration, observing my little cousins, observing the babies of my friends, and observing how they interact with reality. That ever-present feeling and ever-present intimacy with reality, the way that they deal with conflict, the way that they express fearlessly, they express their emotion, the way that they say the truth, the way that they play without any goal, the way that they engage and participate with reality. Probably that's observing children, how they behave and how they operate. It's probably one of my biggest inspiration, I would say.
Yeah, beautiful. What are you most grateful for today?
Today I'm very grateful for this interview and this connection with you and these questions and this opportunity to connect with you and to for you to create this space of deep, authentic conversations and your intentions also for sharing and spreading beautiful insights with people. This is I'm tremendously grateful.
Thank you. Last question.
Yeah.
Who do you think I should speak to next?
Who do you speak to? In terms of yoga related and yoga teachers, well, I have a bunch of people. I could send you a list actually that you should connect with them.
Yeah.
In terms of teachers or people related with the world of yoga, there is. Well, first of all, we were talking about Mark, and I think it's always amazing to have a conversation with Mark, because the conversation with him, for me, are always insightful. And when I hear also a podcast or conversation with him with other people, are very warm, very real, very intimate. Definitely would recommend to dive deeper into his work and eventually have a conversation with him. There is a woman also, a good friend, who is collaborating with me in the program that I'm running, The Heart of Tantra. Her name is Caro Pontual. She's a Brazilian yoga teacher, tantra teacher. She's pure love and full power woman. He's totally qualified to be a yoga teacher, as even Mark say, as because she's a mother and she's a woman. And that's enough sometimes to realize that he's so qualified to spread the word of yoga. He's an outstanding teacher, and she's collaborating with me in the program that I'm running of Tantra now, the online program. So definitely I will send you the contact if you wanna reach out to her.
Yes, that'd be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. I think this is the end of our interview. I wanna thank you for your time and all your inspiring words and for sharing your story. I think you are a big inspiration for a lot of teachers, so I'm really happy to have had this conversation, and I thought it was very insightful for me to say. So, thanks.
Thank you so much again for creating this space, for inviting me, for trusting. It's so good to see you again as well. And we will keep in touch. Thank
for
you so
sure.
much.
if people that are listening right now want to know more about you, where can they reach out? Should they follow you on Instagram or your website? I will add everything in the show notes so they can...
Sure, most of the time I'm sharing content on YouTube, Facebook and Instagram. YouTube.com/SebastianValenci. My Facebook's Sebastian Valenci as well. And my Instagram Aries line SV, Sebastian Valenci. And normally I am committed to share and use social media as a tool, right? As a tool for spreading things that I feel like are need to be spread, and sharing insights, sharing my process as well. And I think it's a beautiful tool that can be used in a very good way. So yeah, anybody, if they wanna reach me out, I am there, present.
Yes. All right, I'll add it to the show notes. And again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much to you, and we'll see each other soon.
I'm sure we will. Thanks. And that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can find the show notes at yeyoga.nl/podcast. And if you like this show, please show your support by hitting that subscribe button in your podcast app. Give us a high rating and share this episode with someone who might be interested as well. You can also follow me on Instagram at Renee Leeuw. That's Renee Leeuw. I'd love to connect with you. Namaste.